Hey, true crime besties. Welcome back to an all new episode of Serialistly. Hello, hello, and welcome back to an all-new episode of Serialistly with me, Annie Elise, here to break down headline highlights with you today. We've got a lot to talk about. There are new cases, breaking cases, updates in cases. I mean, so much to talk about. First and foremost, though, I want to just quickly address the elephant in the room with my voice. I saw all of you guys commenting on my Monday episode asking, who's reading the ads for this? Annie, why aren't you even reading your ads anymore? Who is this? It's me, guys. It's me. I feel like that movie, what's that movie, The Hot Chick? It's me, Jessica. I'm in here. No, my voice is completely trashed and gone. So it's me. I'm going to sound a little bit mannish for the rest of this episode, but we're hopeful, you know, we'll get through it all together. Just got back from tour a few days ago. It was a great leg of the tour. There were a lot of problems logistically, actually, and it kind of ended up being a little bit of a shitstorm, but it all worked out. All the shows were amazing. Lots of sold out shows, amazing crowd. And yeah, we have, well, gosh, only five cities left. Tampa, Orlando, those are both next week. Then Tacoma, Portland, and San Francisco. And I think those are almost close to being sold out. So check and grab your tickets now before they're gone. You can do that at annieelise.com. But yeah, want to get into some updates today and some new cases that are breaking that a lot of you guys have been sliding in my DMs about. And before we get into all of those, I do want to welcome back Amy to Headline Highlights. Hey, Amy.
Hey.
Are you like dying at how I sound right now?
I mean, I've been hearing it for the last week, so.
I thought it was finally getting better. It's not. It's here to stay, I think.
I think
it's
just, maybe you need another shot.
I took the steroids this morning, again, the pills. I did. But it's just not.
You just need to give your voice a break.
I just don't think it's possible. I talk too much. I don't know. We'll see. So yeah, Amy's back and going to be joining today's episode. So super exciting. I saw all of you guys flooding the comments being like, where is Amy? Where is Amy? We're used to her now. So relax, everyone. She's back. But yeah, so first I want to start with some updates. And I saw this kind of first float across my screen maybe a couple weeks ago, but I didn't really know the magnitude of what it was. And I just want to touch on it briefly because I absolutely freaking hate this person more than life itself. So I don't want to give him any airtime, but it's Chad Daybell, okay? Because he's back. He's trying to like talk to people again. He's trying to, I don't know if he's trying to be a cult leader again or what is he's trying to do, but he has now started this blog of sorts from Death Row, and it's called Letters from Chad. Now, as we know, Chad's daughter, Emma, has believed in his innocence pretty much from day one. She has stood by him, advocated for him, and now she's also helping him get these letters out to the public, all while he is still sitting in this cell in Idaho maximum security. She still thinks he's innocent. She thinks he's been framed, that he has been wrongfully convicted, which I don't know if that is just pure denial as a child and not wanting to think the worst of your father or if she truly believes that. But in any event, she is helping get these letters out there. And the homepage reads, "Welcome to Letters from Chad. This website features letters uncensored and unfiltered written by Chad Daybell from his cell on death row. All contained opinions are his. He receives no financial compensation." Which, look, I just gotta say, this guy needs to read the fucking room. I don't know why he's like having this resurgence or like thinking that he should start sharing these letters and that people actually give a shit what he's doing and what his opinions are and his life stories. Maybe there are people out there who still follow him. I don't really know. That's a bit concerning, and maybe I'll table that for another day. But it seems to me like he's kind of trying to pull a Jody Hildebrandt and still be like this master puppeteer from behind bars. Again, just my impression. But the letters really seem to be stories about his life, his near-death experiences, LDS missions that he took in the past. He even actually recalls times with his first wife, Tammy, and when they first moved to Idaho, when they got married, when they started their first publishing company, which it's kind of like, okay, that's all great, I guess, if you want to reminisce and go down memory lane. But also, you killed her. So, like, why are you reminiscing about when you got married and how you, when you first started the company together? Like, you're the one who actively took a role in taking her life so that you could marry dingbat Lori Vallow. I mean, it just absolutely makes no sense. So the first letter opens up by saying, "Hello, my friends. This is Chad Daybell writing to you from my cell in Idaho's maximum security institution. This is the first of several letters I will send. I want to thank everyone who sent me cards and letters while I have been incarcerated. Your kind words of support really helped me. I cherished each one." Which, whoever is sending him letters and cards, we got to talk. I mean, I understand with every case, there's always going to be a little bit of fanfare to some degree, whether it's Watts, which is disgusting, or Wade Wilson is a great example as well, where people kind of like fawn over these people and don't look at them as the killers that they are, but more of like, I don't even know how to explain it, like some sort of celebrity status. But this is weird. Sending letters and cards to this guy who is convicted and on death row of not only murdering his wife, but somebody's ex-husband, two children, and running a cult. It's just so bizarre to me. And what's so interesting, too, is on this webpage, you know how normal websites will have like an about me section or about the company or something like that? There's no real information about Chad on the about the author page. I would argue that maybe that's because he doesn't want people to know why he actually is on death row, because, you know, most people, I mean, let's just be honest, they do already know. But maybe he's hoping that if people stumble across this, they won't know the extent of all of the allegations. I'm not really sure. So it's going to be interesting to see how long this continues, what comes of it, when he starts asking for something, because I'm sure it's only a matter of time, or if he's really just trying to, you know, rebuild and reestablish this loyal following like he had when he had all of the books and the people with the podcast and everybody fawning over him. Maybe he just really misses that sense of control and notoriety. And I don't know, maybe that's what he's after. Who the heck really knows? All I know is he is a freak. He is fucking ugly, and I hate his guts more than anything. So that being said, let's move into another case update. I talked a little bit about this 2 weeks ago, but now there's another new update, and it's the human remains that were found that were believed to have been Travis Decker's. He's the one who allegedly killed his three daughters. There's been over a 100-day manhunt for him. He had fled. And a few weeks back, human remains were found, and they were thought that they could possibly belong to him. However, it was quickly ruled and identified that those were animal remains, not human remains. However, now another set of remains has been found. On Thursday, September 18th, around 3 p.m., they were using a drone searching for evidence that would lead to Travis Decker, and using the drone, they found a neon green t-shirt that was kind of tucked away in this rugged terrain about, you know, 3/4 of a mile from where Travis Decker's three daughters were killed. And I think the long thought behind all of this was that after he took their lives, that he was going to take his own life, that he was going to go off the grid, not really try to live and flee, but take his own life. And so that's why when the first set of remains came up, people were hopeful and thought that it would be him and that there would be some answers. And now we see this, so it's not really too surprising. And so when they discovered this, the officers were, you know, they rappelled down from this helicopter where they then located beyond just that t-shirt, the decomposed human remains that had been scattered around the area. And these remains also included a can of chewing tobacco, clothing, a bracelet, 2 feet, femurs, and even some vertebrae. And the way that these remains were scattered makes the authorities believe that animals may have been in that area and even, quote, disturbed the area, as we know that is pretty common. So the remains were sent to the Washington State Police Crime Lab. They're being tested for DNA to confirm if they belong to Travis or not. However, it's looking more likely that they do belong to him rather than not, especially because of the other items and clothing that was found that they believe to belong to Travis. So at the time of this recording, it has not been confirmed. Maybe once this releases, there will be confirmation, but it seems as though we may finally have an answer with that case. So that's it for updates. Now we're going to go into some new cases. And we have a lot to talk about. There has been no shortage of disturbing cases this week. And let me just say, we are going to talk about the singer David, the Tesla of it all, the craziness, and we're going to get to all of that. But first, I want to start with this case. So this case that we're going to talk about is really shocking. Earlier this week in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, six children were found locked inside a storage unit. And we're not talking about like a converted space or something livable or even, you know, how people sometimes will do like van life or like small spaces or like sea container things. We're talking about a literal storage unit, a metal and concrete room with no lights, no running water, nothing, just cold, hard walls and complete darkness. And get this, the kids were 2 months old, 2 years old, 3 years old, 5 years old, 7 years old, and 9 years old, which let that just sink in for a minute. A two-month-old infant was inside this storage unit. Can you even imagine that? I mean, these babies, literally most of them were toddlers and then also a newborn, and they were left in what is essentially this cold metal box with no running water, no heat, no anything. It's just incredibly sad. And you might be wondering, okay, well, how did they even find these kids in the first place, right? Well, around 1:30 a.m. on Tuesday, September 16th, somebody called 911 to report a child that was crying inside the locked unit at the local store safe. And when the officers arrived, they said that they heard crying and coughing from inside one of the units. Authorities say that when they found the kids, there was a mattress without any sheets, a sectional couch, a bucket filled with urine, because remember, there was no bathroom, and essentially no light anywhere. In fact, the only light that the officers saw was from the cracks around the door. Now, thankfully, I guess the unit was, I misspoke earlier, I guess there was some air conditioning, more so it was temperature controlled. So it was temperature controlled at 76 degrees, but the officers described the conditions as, quote, putrid. Take a listen.
In the middle of the night, our camera is spotting police near 27th and Silver Spring for a report of children locked in a self-storage facility. The urgent call for help coming in just after 1:30 a.m.
Police are on scene. Requesting a forced entry. They believe baby is locked in one of the storage lockers.
But it wasn't just one baby.
Update from the police. They believe there's two children locked inside the locker.
Or two inside the locked storage unit. Instead, Milwaukee police say they found six children, ages 9, 7, 5, 3, 2, and a two-month-old. All of them alone.
Now, to get inside of this storage unit, firefighters had to cut a padlock to even get inside. The kids had been left there all alone. And as for the parents, they were asleep in a car nearby. Inside the car with them, too, was their family dog. And they were parked inside the parking lot of this storage facility. So it was almost like they arrived at the storage facility, shoved all of their children inside this unit, and then went out to the car to sleep with the dog. So let me talk a little bit about the parents here too, because there is a little bit of information to unpack here. So 33-year-old Charles DuPriest and 26-year-old Azia Zelinsky told the police that they were homeless and that they had been kicked out of a local shelter about a month and a half ago. They admitted that yes, they had been staying in this storage unit from time to time, but according to the reports, this wasn't just a night or two. This was ongoing from the time they left that shelter. So it was several nights a week, which hearing that at first, I know some of you might be thinking what I thought at first as well. Like, okay, well, maybe they were desperate. Maybe they had no other options. It seems as though they did put a mattress in there, a sectional. Maybe they were trying to make it into the best version of an apartment or living situation for their kids that they possibly could, which I could see that, until they literally told the police that they did have other options. They openly admitted to the police officers that the children could have stayed with family members instead of staying inside that storage unit. And even if this was their only option, I mean, locking your kids, especially that young age, like infant all the way into toddler age, locking them inside a storage unit with absolutely no way to get out, no food, no water, no bathroom, no light, obviously unacceptable, obviously a huge problem. And it makes you wonder, you know, how long this could have continued until something catastrophic could have happened. And what makes this even more sad is what the kids said to the police officers after being found. The 9-year-old told police that he was responsible for taking care of the other five children, all while their parents were either away or out drinking. He also said that he was responsible for giving the baby a bottle, a pacifier, or picking her up whenever she cried. He said that he had no phone or any other way to contact his parents in case of an emergency inside that locked storage unit. The 7-year-old also said that they wouldn't know how to get out of there if there was ever an emergency. And the three-year-old said that she was, quote, upset that the dog got to sleep in the car while she and her siblings slept in the unit. And that's, think of all of that just for a moment. I'm kind of just trying to wrap my brain around it. A nine-year-old responsible for taking care of all of these toddlers and an infant. How does a nine-year-old know how to even, like, quiet or calm a crying baby? Even grown adults don't even know how to do that, right? So having that kind of weight and responsibility, then knowing that if there is, God forbid, an emergency, you have no way of calling for help, you have no way of getting out, you have no way of alerting your parents, all because what? They feel like it's more important to go out and, like, binge drink and party and ignore the fact that they have children. It kind of reminds me, actually, of that TV show Shameless a little bit. Like, a younger version, even, with the kids, which is awful. But, like, I don't know. It's just very upsetting. So both parents have been arrested and charged, and the kids have been taken into protective custody. Now, as if that wasn't disgusting enough, another blow and piece of information that surfaced in all of this is that Charles, the father, is on the registry as an offender. He has a conviction from back in 2010 where he allegedly assaulted a 13-year-old girl when he was 17 years old. And then also on top of that, when the police found these two parents or adults or whatever you want to call them, I guess, dirtbags outside of this storage complex after they discovered all of their kids locked inside, he also had a gun with him. So now, on top of 6 counts of child neglect, he's also facing a charge for possession of a firearm as a felon. The mother is facing 6 counts of child neglect as well. And the whole case really raises a lot of questions about how the family slipped through the cracks, especially with 6 children involved in all of this, including, again, a literal infant. Were any of them in school? When was the last time anyone was in school? When is the last time anybody had eyes on them? What is the condition of their health, of them physically, of them mentally, emotionally? Can they read? Can they write for the older ones? I mean, there's a lot of questions, I think, that we're still going to learn, because sometimes, too, in cases like this, when we see that either a few children or several children are either tucked away or hidden for months or years at a time, almost kind of in like a House of Horrors type situation, there is even more neglect below the surface. And that doesn't really even start to surface until you start doing all of the evaluations. So we'll see what else we learn from this, how long it's been going on, what the true circumstances were, why they got kicked out of the shelter, why they were allegedly prioritizing drinking above their own children. So I will be following this case as it moves through the courts. Hopefully these kids are now, I know they're in protective custody, but hopefully they are with family members who love them, can take care of them. We know the parents said that they had family members they could go to, but for whatever reason, chose not to send them to those family members. So we will follow this closely and see where we go from here. But obviously, incredibly heartbreaking and incredibly disturbing.
Yeah, that's so sad. So unfortunately, this next case is also involving children. It's a case out of Pennsylvania that is just awful. I don't have any words. It's super disturbing. And actually, as I started researching it, it was just worse and worse as it went on. It's about a woman named Jessica Mothy. She's 39 years old from Cadogan Township in Armstrong County. And it all started with a simple eviction, but then what they found after she was evicted has shaken the entire community. So what started all of this and how this all came to light was Jessica had been living in a rental home in Cadogan Township, Armstrong County. Nothing super unusual. She was raising her 2 kids, ages 6 and 8. And from the outside, everything looked like a normal, quiet life. But then Jessica got evicted, and as most landlords do, they go in and they clean up the property and get it all ready to rent it out again. And what they thought they were going to walk into was maybe a few cats, a mess, and just some normal things that they needed to clean up. And I mean, they did have a huge mess. The house was filthy, but then as they were cleaning, they noticed an awful smell coming from the closet. So worse than anything in the house, when they opened the closet, they made a discovery that nobody should have to make, and inside a trash bag was the tiny body of a baby. Obviously, they called the police immediately, and investigators came in, confirmed that, in fact, it was the body of a deceased baby, and started going through the house carefully, searching for any evidence or anything else out of the quote-unquote norm. And that's when things got even worse, because it wasn't just the one baby in the closet, it was actually 4. Four separate infants were found inside the house over the course of a few days of the investigation, one in the closet and three others in the attic, wrapped in towels or plastic and placed in tote bags. Here's an interview with one of the neighbors.
Very sick, very disgusted, sad for the two that are left behind.
Elizabeth Jeremy helped the landlord search for 3 days for several cats left behind after Mothy was recently evicted. To know she was so close to those dead babies repulses her.
It was very cluttered. You could not walk through a room without tramping over things. Lots of laundry, lots of food left behind.
She remembers a funny smell upstairs in a bedroom.
And it smelled very funny. It didn't have a very potent smell when we first went in, but upstairs in the one specific bedroom, it did smell.
Police discovered two plastic totes along with trash bags with newborn babies.
So when police questioned Jessica, she allegedly admitted she had given birth to all of them. And the way she described the incidents is beyond heartbreaking. She said she gave birth to the first baby in the bathroom, but then passed out afterward. And when she woke up, the baby was underneath her on the floor, not breathing. And then the second baby was allegedly stillborn. Jessica said she gave birth to the third baby while sitting on the toilet. The baby fell into the toilet and she left it there for several minutes. She heard the baby making noises, proof that the infant was alive, and instead of calling for help, she wrapped it in a towel, held it until it stopped making sounds, and then put the body in a trash bag and hid it inside the closet. So when I was actually reading this, it sounded very reminiscent of Lake and Snelling, which we covered just a couple weeks ago, and just how there was these different theories that was she like laying potentially on the baby and what had happened there. So this sounds a bit similar, unfortunately. Now, the thing that makes this even harder to process is that during all of this, Jessica was living in the house with her two surviving children, going on with her life as if this horrible thing didn't happen four different times. Meanwhile, her husband has been sitting in jail on unrelated charges, more specifically a DUI and endangerment of a child, but again, unrelated, since January of this year. We don't know if he knew about these pregnancies, the babies, any of it. Nothing in that sense has been confirmed yet. But neighbors and community members are stunned. On the outside, Jessica didn't really stand out. She looked like just a mom living her life, raising her kids. And no one expected that all of this was going on behind closed doors. And now this small Pennsylvania town is left with more questions than answers. How could this go unnoticed for so long? And what exactly will come out of this once all the evidence is laid out? So let's talk about where things stand legally. Jessica Mothy has been charged with criminal homicide for the death of an infant, involuntary manslaughter in connection with another baby, and multiple counts of concealing the death of a child, as well as abuse of a corpse. She's being held without bail, which honestly makes sense given the severity of what investigators have said happened. And now her two young children, who were already probably dealing with trauma having their father in jail, are also now having to lose their mother. This case is still unfolding, and we're going to learn more as it moves through the justice system. But right now, investigators are piecing together timelines, autopsy results, and evidence. And of course, we'll be watching it every step of the way.
It's interesting because I saw something come up a few days ago, probably before you researched this too, when the fourth baby was found. And so I'm wondering if we're done or if they're going to find more in there as well. And the tough part with all of that is there's no proof. I mean, obviously she says that with that one pregnancy or delivery, I should say, she left it in the toilet, left the baby in the toilet and then essentially suffocated her baby to death. But the other ones, it may be difficult to prove whether it was truly a stillbirth, what really happened, if there are more babies that are found, and then like what charges come from that. It, again, to your point, it kind of just brings you back to like Lake and Snelling, Alexi Treviso, all of these things where it's like, where is that fine line of proving that there was knowledge of your pregnancy and then intent to get rid of it rather than, you know, natural causes taking their course or something to that
effect. Well, four different pregnancies. I mean, that's over the course of many years.
Yeah.
So how could a husband not be aware of any of that?
Of course.
And especially if these poor babies were in the house. I mean, I feel like that would be something that just as I mentioned, like, how does this go unnoticed?
I know. It's awful to think about. Ugh, it's sick. Which, speaking of sick, we're going to move into this next story, which is honestly, like, the grossest story ever. And if you're eating right now, or if you recently ate, you may want to skip this next case because it's one of the most sickening and disgusting cases that I have covered recently. I truly mean it. It is vile, it is stomach-turning, and it is, you're going to want to vomit. And the worst part is there wasn't just one person involved in all of this. It's actually a husband-wife duo. They lived in this quiet Florida town and seemingly were this, you know, relatively normal couple, but they've been accused of doing horrific things beyond comprehension. So this all started when the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children received a tip about explicit CSAM material that was being shared on Snapchat. And for those who aren't familiar with the term CSAM, it stands for overly explicit sexual assault and abuse and different types of material involving children. Okay. So from there, that tip was sent to the Lake City Police Department, and detectives in Lake City started digging, and they eventually traced the activity back to a man named Jordan Hoffman. So Jordan's 33 years old. He's a firefighter, he's a father of two young kids, and he's just overall someone that you would think would be kind of someone who would almost be protecting others, right? A firefighter, a father, not someone who is allegedly creating the danger behind closed doors. But once police got their search warrant and looked into what Jordan had in his possession, it truly was like opening Pandora's box. I mean, just a box to true evil. Because investigators found several pornographic images of various young children, as well as, get this, numerous images of Jordan engaging in sex acts with a dog. Bestiality. Disgusting. So Jordan was arrested on August 25th, and at the time, he was facing charges for possession of child material and unlawful use of a two-way communication device. He was booked into the Columbia County Jail and denied bond, which, thank God, but the case doesn't end there, because less than 2 weeks later, things escalated. On Tuesday, September 3rd, Jordan was hit with 53 additional child charges. When police did a forensic analysis on his phone, they found even more explicit images. His new charges involved things all around promoting sexual performance by a child and also sexual activities involving animals. Now, initially, people assumed that his wife was completely unaware of what her husband was doing, that he was just kind of this monster behind closed doors, and that nobody knew this secret life and secret perversion of his. Maybe she was even another victim of his double life. But according to the investigators, this was not the case at all. Because just 2 days after the additional charges were added against Jordan, she also was arrested. Because when the investigators did that forensic analysis on Jordan's phone, they also found his wife engaging in the exact same horrible acts. So she's also now facing 5 counts of possession of child material and 8 counts of unlawful sexual activity involving animals. So not only was she aware, but she was actively involved.
The wife of a Columbia County firefighter now joins him behind bars after Lake City police say they found videos of the couple having sex with animals. 27-year-old Harley Hoffman was arrested today, days after her husband, 33-year-old Jordan Hoffman, was arrested on similar charges. Officers say they also found pornographic images of young children. Both face charges of child porn possession and sex with animals. Jordan also faces charges of promoting sexual performance by a child.
Now, I gotta say, you have to be a sick freak to not only do this kind of stuff against children, have material involving children, but then, like, you're boning animals. You're taking pictures of you in sex acts with animals. Like, that's a whole nother level of just, like, grotesque, disgusting. I don't even know where to begin with that. And you know what it kind of reminds me of? Shoot. What is the name of that case? Was it the Perkins case? Cynthia Perkins? I can't remember. Maybe I'm getting two of them confused. There was a case a couple years ago where it was a husband-wife duo, and they were into all sorts of weird stuff. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but, like, she was a teacher. She had him ejaculate into, like, cake batter, and she made cupcakes for her students with his semen in it and, like, fed them to her students. And I think there was some bestiality involved in that too. Don't quote me on that. It was a few years now. But unfortunately, this isn't the only time we've ever heard of this. It is so disgusting. So right now, both Jordan and Harley are being held without bond. And honestly, that's exactly where they should be, because as I mentioned earlier, they have children, which thankfully these children were immediately removed from the home. It hasn't been released if they were the victims in those images. I truly hope not. I hope that this does not go deeper into that. I would imagine if it was them that there would also be some incest charges, but I don't know. We'll keep an eye on this. I mean, either way, being exposed to this at such a young age is just awful. And how people do this absolutely, these horrible, disgusting things is just beyond me. It is, it's like that, what's that saying? Like not birds of a feather, but we've talked about it before in cases where it's, what is the, folly do? When like two lunatics meet each other by chance and it like turns into just this horrible like tornado together where they do the unexplainable and unthinkable and they just like fuel off of each other. It seems very similar to something like that. Like how do these two creeps just find each other, right? Fall always feels like a reset button, right? It's like you have back to school time, you have new sports, busier routines, shorter days. Sometimes, you know, the sun starts going down earlier. And between all of like the back and forth and the new mix up and like everything changing with the season, finding time to cook can be pretty tough, which I've talked to you about why I love Factor before, but I'm going to talk to you about it again because not only do I love it for my personal life, I also love Factor at work when I'm trying to just like eat a quick meal in between recordings. Their chef prepped, dietitian approved meals make it easy to stay on track and enjoy something that's comforting and delicious no matter how hectic the season gets or your schedule gets. You can choose from a wider selection of weekly meal options, including premium seafood choices like salmon and shrimp, all at no extra cost, or their other amazing options. Also, for the first time, you can try Asian-inspired meals that have super bold flavors that are influenced by China, Thailand, and more. And from having more choices to better nutrition, that's why 97% of customers say that Factor helped them live a healthier lifestyle. Feel the difference no matter your routine. And like me, I love their little quick two-minute meals. It's so fast. They're so good. It's like, it's enough food. It's filling, but it's also like flavorful and hearty and savory. And so I feel full after it. And I use this, and you definitely should too. It has been, you know, for over a year now, kind of a game changer in my life. So eat smart at factormeals.com/AE50off and use code AE50off to get 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. That's code AE50off at factormeals.com for 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. Get delicious, ready-to-eat meals delivered with Factor. Offer only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. That's factormeals.com/AE50off and use code AE50off. Okay, so there's one more case that I want to talk about today, just very, very briefly. You guys have been flooding the DMs, the comments. Everybody's asking about this case. And I was going to make it a main one in today's episode, but after doing some research, the details around this case are super, super crazy. It's truly all over the place. And it's the case of David and Celeste Hernandez. So many of you have heard about this already, I know. But basically, there was a dismembered body that was found in the trunk of this singer, David's Tesla. And it turned out to be the body of a 14-year-old girl who has been missing since April of 2024. Now, the official investigation is still ongoing, but there have been a lot of details coming out. Not only details about the artist, about a possible relationship between the two of them, just some really creepy coincidences, some things that are very intentional, some things that feel almost like this was, I don't want to say planned, but maybe, I don't know, some really strange things that tied the two of them together. Matching tattoos, Discord messages, possible hints in his song lyrics and his music videos. Even at one point at one of his shows, him having a casket there where you like leave notes to dead people. I mean, it just kind of, there's so much. So again, as I wanted to talk about it originally here, but I quickly realized way too much information to pack into a headline highlights. The rabbit hole just goes so, so deep. So with all of that to say, we will be dropping a deep dive episode on Monday about this case. Keep an eye out for it. It is going to be a long one. When I tell you we have filed for documents, media, information, and so we have received so much information. We're still trying to distill all of it as of today, but that deep dive will be on Monday for you. where we go through all of it. Everything you've seen probably on TikTok, the theories that we're going to talk about, literally everything. So wanted to at least address that here because I know a lot of you guys have been asking for it. So it is coming. Fear not. It will be here soon. Anything else that you have?
No, I think that's it.
It's been a busy week. So thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of Serialistly. I'll be back with you on Monday with an all-new deep dive into a case. As a reminder, tour tickets are limited, almost gone actually for some of them. I think Tampa might be sold out, but there might be a couple left. So annieelise.com. Next week is Tampa and Orlando. Then we go to Tacoma, Portland, and San Francisco. And then that is a wrap for the tour. So grab your tickets now, annieelise.com. All right. Thank you guys so much. And until the next one, be nice. Don't kill people. Don't put anybody in your trunk. Don't lock anybody in any storage units. And definitely do not give Chad Daybell any fucking attention. Don't send him any birthday cards or any like greeting cards, and just leave that loser to rot and die. All right, that's it. Bye, guys.